Hello, it's Sunday, December 14, 2008, and I'm Eric Hupschmid. I'm sure you've noticed that the Obama government has some of the same people from the Clinton administration, including Hillary Clinton. I'm not surprised that we end up with the same people because the Democrats seem to be under the control of Zionist Jews. Millions of people, including some of my own relatives, are happy to see Hillary Clinton working with Obama because they believe that the Clintons are much better at managing the economy than the Republicans. I've been told that the economy was wonderful when Bill Clinton was president, but as soon as Bush was elected, the economy deteriorated for everybody except the billionaires. However, I think the wonderful economy under the Clinton administration was just a trick. I think that the Jews were fooling the Chinese into stockpiling American money and working for low wages in order to create the impression that the American economy was doing great. And in return, the Jews were secretly providing the Chinese with stolen technology and helping the Chinese get into the Panama Canal, and who knows what else the Jews were doing for China. I'm sure the Chinese thought they were benefiting from their relationship with the Jews, but I think the Jews were cheating the Chinese and setting them up for destruction. This brings up two very important issues about crime. The first is that when you work with a crime network, then you're giving support to that network, which helps them survive and grow larger. The second is that when you work with a person who's willing to cheat other people, you take the risk that he'll cheat you also. For example, your criminal friend might give you a great deal on a stolen necklace that's made of pure gold, but in reality, it may be gold-plated steel. Or, after you help the crime network commit a big crime, they may kill you and take your share of the money. Now consider how this applies to China. I think people in the Chinese government have been working with the criminal Jews for decades. I think the Chinese were excited to get the stolen technology and the military weapons and access to the Panama Canal and whatever else. But I think the entire time the Jews were cheating them, infiltrating China, and setting China up to be destroyed. Years ago, I saw the movie called Fargo. As with a lot of Hollywood movies, it claims to be a true story. But it's as true as the Hollywood movies about the Holocaust, the Apollo moon landing, and the 9/11 attack. Joel and Ethan Coen, the two Jews who wrote and produced Fargo, are just lying to us. It's just another idiotic Hollywood movie. But there's a particular scene in that movie that I still remember, and I think it's a good image to describe the relationship between China and the Jews, or between America and the Jews, or even between the media and society. In the movie, a couple of criminals successfully get away with a lot of money. One of the criminals decides that he wants all of the money for himself, so he kills his friend and puts his dead body into a wood chipping machine in order to destroy it. This is what the Jews are doing with us. China has been committing crimes with the Jews for a long time, and the Chinese assumed that they were having a wonderful relationship with the Jews, but the entire time the Jews were getting their wood chipping machine ready so that they could stuff China into it. And the Americans who spend money on magazines, newspapers, and Hollywood movies assume that they also have a wonderful relationship with the media. But the Jews who control the media are just setting up their customers for destruction and shredding us in a wood chipping machine. China has been a fool. They stockpiled an enormous amount of American dollars, and they've been tricked into processing electronic waste at a very low cost, and they've allowed Jews to open gambling casinos and banks. This brings up an important issue that affects us right now. There are news articles appearing today in which the Chinese are complaining that they want us to make sure that their investments in American dollars are safe. They're demanding that we take care of our economy so that their enormous stockpile of American dollars retains its value. They're trying to convince us that we owe them something, that we're obligated to protect their investments. The behavior of China is interesting. They're not apologizing for their decades of stealing from us. They're not asking how they can work with us to get rid of the Jewish crime network or the incompetent government officials that dominate both of our nations. Instead, they're demanding that we feel sorry for them. They're behaving like spoiled, bratty children. If my interpretation of what's going on is correct, you can visualize the situation as a variation of that movie Fargo. Imagine this scenario. Imagine that a Chinese person and a Jew work together to steal money from you. Imagine they sneak into your house, steal your money, and then run away. As they escape, the Jew grabs the Chinaman by the leg and tries to shove him into a wood chipping machine. As the Chinaman struggles to stay away from the blades, he yells to you to get his share of the money away from the Jew and deposit it into his bank account. There's lots of ways we could react to China's complaining. We could tell them that we're not obligated to protect their enormous pile of American dollars. We could tell them that there are lots of expressions for their situation, such as, when you sleep with dogs, you get bit by fleas. Furthermore, I think the Jews have been planning for years to trick the Americans, Canadians, and Mexicans into forming a North American Union and replacing all of our currencies with the Amero. According to a British newspaper that listed the 30 greatest conspiracy theories, the Amero was theory number 11, and they claimed it was false. However, a variety of these coins have been produced since 2007. The website that produces and sells them claims that they're purely for entertainment. But these coins are so detailed, you have to wonder about this. And there's also photos on the internet of paper Ameros. I suspect that the criminal Jewish network has been planning to set up a North American Union for a long time. And they plan to replace all of our currencies with the Amero, just like they created a European Union and replaced all of their currencies with the Euro. There's nothing wrong with the concept of nations uniting together or using a common currency. A lot of people are afraid of a world government, but it doesn't matter how many governments we have. The important issue is who is in control of the government and what authority do they have. America has hundreds of state governments and city governments, but having lots of governments isn't doing anything to protect America from crime or corruption. Every government in America is disgusting, corrupt, and wasting tax money. It doesn't matter if the world has only one government or if we have hundreds of nations and each has hundreds of city and state governments. The most important quality of a government is the people in it. The next most important aspect of a government is the structure of the government and the authority that the people have. Our primary concern should be the people in the government. Unfortunately, the majority of people are lacking whatever is necessary to care about or make proper decisions about government officials. As a result, our banking system has been taken over by a few Jewish families, and every government is dominated by organized crime gang members, alcoholics, pedophiles, and freaks. A world government would be useful if it was designed properly and if we put respectable people in control of it. But the Jews are not interested in creating a world government to make the world a better place. They want a North American Union because they have plans to fill that government with their own gang members and blackmailed pedophiles. The United Nations, the European Union, and other types of world governments are just tricks to make it easier for a small network of criminal Jews to get control of a large number of people. The Jews were successful in tricking the Europeans into allowing a small number of Jews to create and dominate the European Union and the Euro, and only a fool would think that these Jews would use this trick on Europe, but nobody else. I'm sure the Jews have been struggling for years to create a North American Union, and I bet they also have plans to do this to South America and Asia and even Africa. There's lots of patriots in America who are trying to expose the North American Union as a trick by the mysterious New World Order. However, those people, such as Alex Jones, WorldNet Daily, and Hal Turner, are wolves in sheep's clothing. They're what we call controlled opposition. They're Pied Pipers who are trying to locate and identify those of us who oppose the North American Union. Once they know our names, they can look for ways to eliminate us. They can also pretend that people like me don't exist because they don't want you to know what I have to say. They want to dominate this so-called truth movement. However, I think the Jews have been failing to get the North American Union established. It's not easy to convince Americans to accept this union because America and Mexico are very different. Not many Americans are interested in joining with Mexico. So what are the Jews going to do? How are they going to convince us to join with Mexico and Canada? I suspect that the Jews are currently trying to create economic chaos in America and ruin the American dollar. Imagine America with millions of unemployed, angry, and frightened people. The Jews could take advantage of this in a lot of ways. For example, they could certainly convince millions of frightened Americans that the solution is to do what the Europeans did, namely, unite together with Canada and Mexico in order to create a larger, stronger North American Union and to create a new and stronger currency. Furthermore, if the Jews can ruin the American dollar and economy, they would cause financial problems for China because of their enormous stash of American dollars, which would lose its value, and because a lot of Chinese industries would shut down as the Americans stopped purchasing their products. Imagine China with millions of unemployed, angry, and frightened people, and imagine the Chinese government is angry because their stockpile of American dollars is almost worthless. The Jews would be able to take advantage of that anger in a lot of different ways. For example, they might be able to trick the Chinese into thinking that the solution to their economic problems is to take control of the wealthy and prosperous Taiwan, so that the two nations can be combined into a larger and more prosperous economy that uses only one currency. This would start a war between China and Taiwan, and the Israelis would certainly offer military support and advice. If the Chinese were foolish enough to accept Israel's help, then the Jews would be able to monitor and influence the war, as well as conduct secret killings during the chaos. Of course, those are just my speculations. I don't actually have evidence of what the Jews are trying to do. But I find it rather suspicious that our stock market goes up and down for no apparent reason. It seems to me as if the Zionist Jews are trying to destroy the American economy, and the banking Jews are trying to stop it. This would explain why the Federal Reserve and Henry Paulson are refusing to explain what they're doing with their bailout money. Perhaps they don't want us to realize that these Jews are fighting for control of the world. Paulson and the others might also be giving some of the money to their friends to help them from losing their investments. And it's very suspicious that many American corporations have allowed themselves to get into incredible debt. How could so many executives and accountants be so stupid? I think we should consider the possibility that the people in control of these corporations were deliberately ignoring their financial problems because they were told that the North American Union would be established during 2007 after a major disaster, such as nuclear attack by Iran. And during the chaos, everybody's debt would be eliminated and the dollar would be replaced by the Amero. It's also possible that the Jews gave up on the scenario of Iran attacking us with nuclear bombs, and so they told their criminal friends and the corporations to deliberately allow their companies to get into a ridiculous level of debt in order to set America up for such a tremendous financial disaster that the American people become willing to accept a North American Union and a new currency. I don't know how to explain what is going on with the American economy, but I think China has been working with the criminal Jews for decades. And if they have, then we could say that by supporting this crime network, China is partly responsible for the financial problems that they and other nations are facing right now. Furthermore, we should consider the possibility that the reason Israel felt confident about committing the 9/11 attack is because China agreed to remain quiet about the attack in return for all of the technology and weapons and whatever that the Jews helped them acquire. If we could find evidence that China has been making agreements to assist with or remain silent about 9/11 or other crimes, Then we could tell China to quit begging for sympathy because we don't owe criminals anything. We could tell China that they owe the world a favor. And we could say that they can start to repay us by helping us get rid of every organized crime network on the planet, regardless of race or nationality. Or we could tell China that we'll protect their investment in U.S. dollars, but first we're going to deduct all of the value for the stolen technology they've got. According to my quick calculations, the value of that stolen technology is just about equal to the amount of American dollars they have. So we could tell them that they can keep the technology, give us back the money, and the issue is settled. It's also interesting to recall that China was cheating in the Olympics a few months ago. As I described in another audio file, cheating seems to be common in China. Why should we feel sorry for a nation that behaves like this? Of course, to be fair, I'm sure every nation is stealing technology and cheating in sports events. Even corporations within America steal technology from one another, and cheating is common among American sports teams. However, there's something peculiar about the way China cheats, and the same can be said about Russia. They don't seem to cheat in the same manner as other nations or corporations. An example is the theft by Russians of the Concorde aircraft technology. In the 1960s, the Russians and Europeans were developing supersonic passenger airplanes. At the end of 1968, the Russians tested their first airplane and boasted that they were the first nation to develop a supersonic passenger airplane. 2 months later, the British tested their Concorde. However, the two airplanes looked similar in appearance. There were accusations that the Russians had stolen some of the technology, or at least some of the concepts. I had just become a teenager when the Russians were boasting about their aircraft, and even at that age, I couldn't see any sensible reason for the Russians to steal that technology, or even develop the airplane. For example, if their goal was to provide the Russian people with a supersonic passenger airplane, why didn't they just purchase the airplanes from Europe? Developing a supersonic passenger plane is not easy. Even if the Russians stole some of the technology, they had to do a lot of work to design the airplane. And after they finished the design, they had to design and build a factory to produce the airplanes. The Russians had to do a tremendous amount of work to create that airplane. They also had to do a lot of work just to steal technology. Stealing technology is not as simple as walking into a retail store and shoplifting an item. The Russians had to spend time and money in order to get spies in Europe, and then they had to spend more time and money trying to understand and apply the stolen technology. Why would the Russians put so much of their technical talent and resources into developing a supersonic passenger plane? Why didn't they just purchase airplanes from Europe? If they were worried about becoming dependent upon Europe for spare parts, they could have disassembled the Concorde, analyzed it, and copied it. And consider the issue of who the Russians were producing this aircraft for. The ordinary Russian people couldn't afford to fly in such an expensive airplane. Furthermore, Russia was like a prison during the 1960s and 1970s. The Russian government didn't allow tourism, and there weren't many business deals occurring between Russia and other nations. Therefore, the airplane wouldn't be transporting wealthy tourists or businessmen in or out of Russia. So who was going to fly on this airplane? And what routes would this airplane fly? I wasn't surprised to discover that the Russians produced only a few of these aircraft and then abandoned the entire project because it had no purpose or customers. I don't think this issue is trivial. The Russians wasted a lot of their time and money on that aircraft. Even as a teenager, I could see that a nation like Russia had no need for such an aircraft. America was also developing a supersonic passenger plane at about the same time, but it was canceled on the grounds that we don't really need it. So why would a large group of Russian adults believe that they needed such an aircraft? How did they think they were going to benefit from this aircraft? And why would they risk ruining their reputation by stealing ideas or technology? I think that the Russians decided to produce these aircraft because they wanted to prove to the world that Russia is the most technically advanced nation. And I would bet that they put a tremendous amount of time and resources into getting their aircraft finished before the Concorde so that they could boast that they were the first nation with such an aircraft. In other words, the purpose of the project was to impress the world, not provide the Russian people with an airplane. The leaders of Russia wanted the airplane so that they could feel special and imagine themselves as the dominant males. They were behaving like animals who compete for dominance. Or we could say they were behaving like a man who suffers from low self-esteem and who is trying to prove to us that he's actually a very important man. Furthermore, I couldn't understand how the Russians could boast about an aircraft when everybody was accusing them of using stolen technology. If their goal was to impress us, they were failing miserably. The Russians were being ridiculed and insulted. So why were the Russians boasting? Why weren't they ashamed? How do we explain their lack of embarrassment? When I was in the second or third grade, the teacher asked each of us to write a short story as practice for writing. I had no idea what to write about, but I had seen a television show the night before that I thought was interesting. So I wrote a story that was based on the plot of that television show. One of the boys in my class read my story and announced rather loudly to the class that I was copying the plot of a television show rather than creating my own story. I didn't think of myself as a plagiarizer, but by that age, I felt embarrassed about being accused of copying somebody else's work. By the time I was a teenager, I was much more aware of the concept of plagiarism, and I was confused as to how the Russians could proudly show off their aircraft without embarrassment when I was embarrassed as a young child for writing a story that was based on a television show. If only one Russian citizen had behaved in this manner, then I'd dismiss it as an isolated incident. But the decision to steal that technology was made by a group of Russian government officials, and another large group of Russians participated in the theft, and a large group of Russian scientists and engineers analyzed the stolen technology and applied it to the aircraft. And then a lot of Russians proudly boasted about the aircraft, even though people around them were insulting them. How do we explain why so many adults in Russia were willing to support such a stupid project and then boast about it? The lack of embarrassment reminds me of how people on television and in this so-called truth movement can routinely lie to us without any signs of embarrassment. This lack of embarrassment can also be seen with animals and children. Animals have no concept of personal property, or shame, embarrassment, or crime. Animals grab at anything that attracts their attention. They consider themselves as rulers of the world, and they assume that everything they see belongs to them. After an animal grabs something, such as a ball to play with, it will regard it as its own personal property. Animals are not ashamed or embarrassed about stealing items. When a dog grabs a ball, you have to fight with him in order to pull it out of his mouth. I get an amusing image in my mind when I think about what might have happened if the Europeans had caught one of the Russian spies as he was stealing some Concorde technology. I visualize the Russian on his hands and knees with a container of photographs and blueprints in his mouth, and the European is struggling to pull the container out of his mouth while the Russian growls like a dog. Another image I get when I think of the Russians is of a few young children sitting on the floor around a pile of toys. There's plenty of toys for everybody. But when one boy sees another boy playing with a toy, he decides that he needs that toy. So he drops his own toy and grabs the toy from the other boy and then plays with it with no shame or embarrassment. If you've listened to my other audio files, then you know that my attitude is that children are not miniature adults. I think children are an indication of what our primitive ancestors were like. Young children are like animals. They consider everything around them to be their own personal property. They grab at whatever they please. And once they grab something, they consider it to be their own. Children will grab items from retail stores and from other people without any shame or embarrassment. When food is put on a dinner table, both animals and young children will grab at it. And if the children are very hungry, they resemble animals even more closely because their emotions will overpower what little intelligence they have. Young children also eat just like animals. For example, they'll play with their food just like a cat plays with a mouse. When I was a child, I thought it was fun to put butter on a piece of bread, pull off the crust, and then form the bread into cylinders, squares, rectangles, and other shapes. And young children consider it entertaining to throw food at one another. And very young children even consider it amusing to splash liquids, such as water or soup. And it doesn't bother children to eat with their mouth open, or spit food onto the table, or eat food that they spit out. And when children are hungry, they'll sometimes eat as rapidly as an animal, often without chewing the food. Children and animals are not bothered by their waste products either. Children don't care how messy a bathroom is, or even how messy their own body is. Most people are not aware of how crude children are because we have powerful attractions to children. Women have such intense attractions to babies that it doesn't bother them much when babies vomit on them. The terrible qualities of children would be more obvious if an adult were to behave exactly the same way. I think it's important to have a realistic understanding of animals and children because I think it will help us to understand adult behavior. Just look at your own life. You should be able to see major changes in your personality and behavior. Young children and babies are parasites that require constant feeding and care, and they give nothing in return. When they don't get their way, they have temper tantrums. Their behavior is more disgusting than the most arrogant and selfish king of the Middle Ages. If children had the strength and independence of an adult, they'd be dangerous. Fortunately, children are physically weak and very submissive. It takes quite a few years before children can understand such concepts as personal property, plagiarism, theft, and lying. And it takes years for children to develop a concern for how they eat their meals. I don't think we should dismiss the crude behavior of the Russian and Chinese governments as simply a curiosity or an isolated incident. Decade after decade, we see this crude behavior in both of those nations. This is the behavioral pattern, not a fluke. This is the personality of the people in control of those nations. And consider another issue that had me confused as a teenager. Specifically, why were Russia and China defending themselves against an attack by America? If America had been interested in attacking Russia or China, we could have done so in 1945 when we were the only nation with nuclear bombs. America had a perfect opportunity to destroy or conquer both Russia and China in 1945 and in 1946, 1947, and even 1948. But the Americans never showed any interest in attacking Russia or China or any other nation. When Americans were told that World War II was over, they were glad to get home and leave the rest of the world alone. They didn't want to start more wars. Actually, a lot of Americans were afraid that the Russians and Chinese would attack us. And so after World War II was over, the Americans developed a large defensive military to discourage Russia and China from attacking us. When I was in elementary school in the 1960s, there were a few times when the school would run an exercise in which a siren would go off and we'd climb under our desks to protect ourselves from Russian nuclear bombs. And some Americans were building bomb shelters in their backyards. Americans were afraid Russia and China would attack us. We weren't interested in attacking them. We were told that America and Europe were involved in a Cold War with Russia and China. However, I never heard a sensible explanation for why Russia and China were so afraid of us. The Cold War didn't make any sense to me. Why would a nation as large as Russia be afraid of tiny European nations? And why would Russia and China be afraid of America when America never showed any interest in attacking anybody? Why weren't the Russians and Chinese friendly with us? Why were they stealing from us? Why didn't they want to cooperate with us? What did we do to cause Russia and China to become so fearful, angry, and suspicious of us? It's interesting to consider how dramatically nicer the world would be today if the Russians and Chinese had been friendly with America and Europe during the past 50 years. Imagine if the enormous amount of resources and engineering talent that has been wasted on weapons and wars had been put into useful projects. The entire world would be much more advanced, and both Russia and China would be more desirable places to live. The Russians and Chinese didn't help themselves in any way by hating America or Europe, or by stealing from us. Instead, they wasted their time and resources. Their nations would be much nicer today if they had been cooperating with us. They could have chosen to be our friends, and they could have chosen to work with us. But they chose to be our enemy, and they chose to steal from us. How do we explain their self-destructive decisions? It's also important to consider the issue of why India never became much involved in this Cold War. India could have chosen to live in fear of attack by Europe and America, and they could have decided to put a lot of their resources into developing a large military to protect themselves from us. And Europe and America could have chosen to live in fear of attack by India. When I was in elementary school, I could have been told to climb under my desk when India attacks us with nuclear bombs. But instead, India, America, and Europe chose to be friendly with each other. Why didn't we decide to fear one another? And consider that India allows tourists in and out of their nation, and they allow their own citizens to freely visit other nations. India never became a prison camp like Russia or China. Why didn't India decide to put borders around their nation and force their citizens to remain inside? And then consider that India could have made the decision to send spies into Europe to steal the Concorde aircraft technology. And then they could have proudly displayed their version of that aircraft. But they never made such a decision. Why not? Why did the Russians decide to steal the technology, but not the Indians? I think the best explanation of the Cold War is that the people in control of Russia and China truly have a personality that is more like an animal, or a primitive savage, or a child. Wild animals don't cooperate or work with one another. They consider every other animal as a potential enemy. They're always on the lookout for danger. Wild animals are fearful of humans even if we pose no threat to them at all, and even if we're trying desperately to become their friend and help them. The personalities of the people who dominate Russia and China remind me of animals. They imagine themselves as a helpless little group of people who are surrounded by potential enemies with horrible intentions. They don't see us as friends to work with or cooperate with. If we're nice to Russia and China, they may momentarily relax, but they quickly return to their normal condition of being suspicious and fearful. This is the same behavior we see with wild animals. When you offer food to a wild animal, it might eventually relax for a moment and take the food, but it quickly returns to its natural state of fear and suspicion. Corporate executives also show this tendency to be suspicious and fearful of people who have never shown any desire to hurt them, and they fight with people rather than cooperate with them. They regard their business competitors as potential enemies, not as competitors. In fact, we could describe the conflict between Boeing and Airbus as a cold economic war. The market for aircraft is large enough for both of them, and they could compete with each other in a fair manner. A friendly competition would inspire each company to produce better aircraft. But those two companies don't compete. It would be more accurate to describe what they do as fighting. The Boeing executives also fight with their American competitors in the defense industry. It's also interesting that the leaders of Russia, and especially China, build giant statues of themselves and put posters of themselves all over the nation. Many American businesses and government offices have photographs of people in leadership positions, but that's not the same as those gigantic posters and statues that we see in these communist nations. Even Saddam Hussein built giant statues and posters for himself. All men want to imagine themselves as the dominant male, and we all want to impress and intimidate other men. However, a man would have to be either dumb or have a very crude personality to believe that he's going to enhance his status simply by building a giant statue of himself. I think it's more evidence that the people who behave like that have a more primitive mind. There's another very important aspect of Russia and China that cannot be dismissed. During the past couple of decades, Hong Kong, Japan, and Taiwan have transformed themselves into industrial and scientific powerhouses. Many Americans have been astounded by the progress those nations have made, and when we look at a map of Asia, we're amazed that China is many times larger. And so, many of us assume that when China gets rid of communism and begins to modernize, it will become even more of a powerhouse than Taiwan or Japan, since it has so many more people and so much more resources. On a map that shows all of China, Hong Kong is just a tiny dot that's difficult to locate, and Taiwan is not much easier to find. Even Japan is small compared to China. Taiwan has a population of about 23 million people, and China has a population of maybe 1.3 billion. That means China has 56 times as many people as Taiwan. Therefore, if China and Taiwan are equal in all respects, China should have 56 times as many scientists, engineers, and technicians, and China should have about 56 times as many intelligent conversations about life, and there should be 56 times as many conversations about how to design better cities and how to improve the economy. Hong Kong has about 7 million people, which means that China has about 180 times as many people as Hong Kong. Therefore, there should be 180 times as many intelligent conversations in China as compared to Hong Kong. And there should be 180 times as much technology coming out of China. If everything was equal between all of the different nations of the world, then the larger nations would be much more advanced and have a lot more material wealth. A large nation, such as China, would be able to conduct research programs that tiny nations couldn't support, such as the design of high-speed trains and advanced medical research programs. If everything was equal in the world, Russia, China, India, and America would be the most advanced nations, and China and India would be the most advanced and wealthy of all. However, the opposite is true. Small nations such as Taiwan, Switzerland, and Germany, and Japan can outproduce China and Russia in everything: technology, manufacturing, intelligent conversations, and even art and music. China has a very advanced magnetic levitation train right now, but it was designed and built in Germany. How is it possible for tiny little Germany to outproduce the giant nation of China? And how can the tiny little island of Taiwan outproduce China if Taiwan and China consist of exactly the same Chinese people? Some people will respond that the problem with mainland China is that it became dominated by communists. But that just brings up the question of why mainland China became communist but not Taiwan. Why are some people attracted to communism but not others? If all humans are identical, why aren't we all attracted to the same philosophy? If all people are truly identical, China should be simply a large version of Taiwan or Hong Kong. But China is not a big version of Taiwan. This concept also applies to Russia. Russia has a very large population and a lot of natural resources. Therefore, if all people are identical, Russia should be a large version of Switzerland or Britain or Germany. Russia should have many more intelligent conversations about life, and they should be producing a lot more technology, and their cities and products should be more advanced than those of the smaller nations. The Russians should have been able to develop a better supersonic aircraft than the Europeans. They should have no incentive to steal technology from a smaller nation. So what is their problem? Why would they want to steal technology from small nations? The reason the Russians are stealing technology is because they're not a big version of a European nation. Russia is an inferior nation. A tiny nation such as Switzerland is more advanced, more attractive, and more desirable as both a place to live and a place to visit. And the conversations in Switzerland are more intelligent than those in Russia. Almost nothing intelligent comes out of Russia or China. Instead, they give us fear, hatred, insults, paranoia, ridiculous accusations, and lots of whiny complaints. And compare Eastern European nations to Western European nations. Why is there a difference between these nations if all people are identical? And then consider the areas of the world that are dominated by Jews. As I pointed out in other audio files, and even in one of my videos, if either the Sephardic or Ashkenazi Jews were truly the superior race, then the areas dominated by Jews would be the most impressive areas on the planet. And we would have noticed by now that the most intelligent opinions about life or science are coming from the Jews. But Israel is not the most advanced or desirable nation, and neither is the homeland for the Ashkenazi Jews around the Caspian Sea, and neither are the areas of Chicago or New York City that are dominated by Jews. On the contrary, the areas that are dominated by Jews are full of crime, pornography, toilet humor, and deception. It might help you to understand this issue by comparing America to Western Europe. America should be a large version of Britain and Germany, and we are indeed very similar, but there are some subtle differences between us. For example, Americans are more interested in organized religion and the theory of creationism. Americans also have more trouble controlling their consumption of food, and we have less decorative architecture, and our houses, trains, and other products are often slightly inferior in quality. Americans have lots of excuses to explain these differences. For example, I've heard Americans claim that we're more religious because we're better people, and that Americans are fat because we're so wealthy and produce so much food that we can afford to eat whenever we want to. And I've heard that our architecture is simple because everything in our nation is new and modern. And I've heard that our trains and other products are lower quality because of liberals, labor unions, and environmental regulations. But there's a better way to explain the differences between America and Europe. America, Canada, and Australia are not a random sample of the European population. Most of the people who left Europe for America are what we could describe as ordinary people, and we have lots of Europe's criminals, alcoholics, and weirdos. Australia is even worse. They were originally just a dumping ground for British criminals. And Canada isn't much better than Australia. In other words, the differences between America and Europe is due to the differences in the people. Switzerland is another example of this concept. The nation consists of three primary groups of people, namely Italians, Germans, and French. The German part of Switzerland dominates the other two in regards to technology and industrial production, just like Germany dominates France and Italy. A person of German ancestry continues to behave like Germans even if he moves to Switzerland or America. And a person of French ancestry behaves like other French people, regardless of where he lives. The environment has an effect on us, but we're all designed with a certain mind and personality. A nation is a reflection of its people, and every problem that a nation suffers from can be traced to the behavior of its people. Every nation's primary enemy is its own people. If every nation could put better people in control of their schools, businesses, and governments, and if we could suppress the destructive and badly behaved people, every nation would improve. The world is not suffering from poverty or ignorance or the devil. The world is suffering from the people who fight rather than cooperate, who cheat rather than compete in a fair manner, and who are irresponsible or emotionally disturbed and won't deal with problems. Most people want to believe that human behavior is determined primarily by the environment rather than by genetics. But look at children within a family. They share the same environment, and they can end up with very different attitudes, talents, and lives. And identical twins can end up very similar, even if they're separated at birth and raised in different families. There are significant differences between China and Taiwan, and between China and Japan, and I don't see how we can explain the differences as being due to differences in the environment. I think the crude qualities of China are due to their higher percentage of crude people. On December 11, 2008, the Russian defense minister traveled to China to talk with some of China's officials. China's chairman of the Central Military Commission made some vague remarks about wanting a closer military relationship with Russia. Perhaps that remark was just typical Chinese politeness, but it's more likely that both Russia and China are still suffering from their paranoid delusions that America and Europe are going to attack them. This paranoia has been going on for decades without interruption. My suggestion is that we ignore their fears. We shouldn't assume that we've done something wrong or that we should try to calm them down. I think their fear is the result of their crude, primitive minds. They can't look at America or Europe or Japan as potential friends. Year after year, they behave like a stupid animal who considers everybody to be a potential enemy. We should consider their paranoia to be a behavioral trait that they were born with. We have enough of our own problems. We shouldn't fight with paranoid people because that will reinforce their fears that we really are a potential enemy. And there doesn't seem to be any way to calm them down, so the best policy is probably to ignore them. We should put our effort into dealing with our own problems. I suspect that America's involvement in the Cold War was actually encouraging the paranoia in Russia and China. I also think it's important to consider the difference in behavior between the people in Sicily and the people in Italy. On May 17, 2008, a British newspaper posted a news article about the crimes in Sicily. The article claims that over 80% of the Sicilian businesses are paying protection money to organized crime gangs. It's interesting that this type of crime is invisible to tourists and most Sicilian citizens. The paying of protection money is not the same type of crime as burglary or rape or car theft. This is a parasitic type of crime. These criminals are like fleas that suck some of your blood on a regular basis, but not enough to kill you. They're like the bankers. If the environment is the reason people are different, then what is different about the environment in Sicily to create such incredibly high levels of this particular type of crime? I suggest we consider that Sicily has a higher percentage of people who are more prone to this parasitic behavior. Some Jews in Italy have a website called jewishroots.it. According to them, at least 40% of the population of Calabria and Sicily was Jewish prior to the Inquisition. Both of those areas are at the extreme southern tip of Italy. The Inquisition caused many of those Jews to leave the area, and many others became Christians. The Inquisition brings up an issue that's related to one I've mentioned many times. The Inquisition was an attempt to force people to become Christians. As I've discussed before, most people believe that we can control human behavior with threats, financial incentives, and punishments. However, if we force a person to become a Christian, he may tell us that he's a Christian in order to satisfy us, but he's still the same person. Many of the Jews who converted to Christianity continued to practice Judaism at home. They became what we refer to as crypto-Jews. And the Jews who truly gave up Christianity were still the same people with the same personalities. Nothing actually changed. Forcing a Jew to become a Christian is like putting human clothing on a dog. A dog is still a dog, even when dressed like a human. We can't force a person to become something that they don't want to be. Everybody has a certain personality and talents and limitations, and we can't change our qualities. It's true that certain talents can be developed, but we have limitations. Humans are not pieces of clay that can be molded. We can't force criminals to become honest, and we can't force religious people to give up religion or change religions, and we can't force people with personality disorders to become normal. It would be interesting to do a DNA analysis of criminals to see if certain races of people commit certain types of crimes. We might find that some races have a tendency to form organized crime gangs, for example. They may have a personality that causes them to cluster together in gangs that prey on the rest of us. I also think we should re-examine the ancient societies to determine why they disintegrated. So far, nobody can explain how different groups of people in different areas of the world, several thousand years ago, could form advanced societies and then disintegrate after a few centuries. In the area of Pakistan and India, a few primitive cities started to develop about 4,000 to 5,000 years ago. And later, in the area of Iraq, other cities started to develop, and the people developed a written language and a school system. And in Egypt, the people developed hieroglyphics and arithmetic and pyramids. And then some advanced societies started to develop in Greece, and then Rome. And in China, a group of people began developing paper and cities and fireworks. However, every one of those advanced societies began to disintegrate after a while. How is it possible for a group of people to develop a written language, arithmetic, and business activity, and then, for no apparent reason, the people slowly lose those abilities and degrade into a more primitive people? Why didn't they continue to advance year after year? In December 2008, a couple of geologists at the University of Wisconsin and two Israelis released their report that shows the Eastern Mediterranean region experienced a significant decrease in rainfall from about 100 AD to 400 AD, and they wondered if the drought played a role in the disintegration of the Roman Empire. However, if a drought was responsible for destroying the Roman Empire, there ought to be evidence, such as a significant shortage of food and widespread starvation. A small decrease in rainfall will only create a small increase in deaths, primarily among the poor and stupid people. It doesn't destroy a society, and it doesn't matter whether the drought lasts for 1 year or 400 years. A decrease in rain doesn't cause a society to abandon language or arithmetic or science. I think those geologists were looking for a way to blame the disintegration of the Roman Empire on nature so that we don't consider that people were responsible. As I've mentioned many times, I think all of our problems can be traced to people. Nature is not our problem. I think the Roman Empire and the other early societies deteriorated for the same reason Europe and America are deteriorating right now. For the past few centuries, Europe and America were becoming increasingly advanced, and this attracted primitive people from other nations. We also attract criminals because we have more opportunities for crime, and our societies are much more lenient. There were no sensible immigration policies for the Roman Empire, or the early Chinese society, or the Sumerians, or even the ancient Egyptians. They didn't care who moved into their society. Furthermore, once a society has plenty of food, they have a tendency to feed the people who are hungry, thereby allowing a lot of stupid and defective people to reproduce. The end result is that as a society advances, it slowly becomes dominated by its primitive neighbors, by criminals, and by retarded people. And take a look at the changes in Sweden over the past 50 years. When I was a child, Sweden transformed itself from a regular nation into the sex capital of Europe. We were told that Sweden had become sexually liberated, but there was no explanation for why Sweden chose to do this. Also, there was never a sensible explanation for why people who become liberated feel the need to have sex with animals, or engage in S&M, or have homosexual sex, or other strange sex activities. The implication was that all of us secretly wish we could engage in these strange sexual activities, but our culture was preventing us from doing what we truly wanted to do. Therefore, once we become liberated, we become free to behave in the manner that is truly natural to us. I no longer believe that Swedish people became liberated. Today, I suspect that by the 1960s, the Jews had acquired so much influence in Sweden that they were imposing their crude attitudes on Swedish culture. Sweden, Switzerland, and certain other nations never got involved with World War II, and were told it was because those nations weren't interested. But once you realize that the Jews instigated both world wars and were manipulating the Nazis, it's more likely that those nations stayed out of the war because the Jews were using them for banking, for bases of operation, and who knows what else. In addition to becoming sexually liberated, Sweden became socialist. Today I suspect that this is also because of the influence of Jews. As I pointed out before, each of us has a certain personality and we're attracted to certain philosophies, people, and lifestyles. Who among us is attracted to communism or socialism? It seems to me that the people most attracted to socialism are people who are young and people who have a parasitic personality. If children had to select a philosophy, I'm sure a lot of them would prefer socialism over a philosophy that requires everybody to contribute to society and take care of themselves. Children are parasites. They expect other people to feed them, provide them with a home, and entertain them. If animals were more intelligent and had to select a philosophy, I suspect that they would also prefer socialism. Animals prefer to beg for food rather than find their own food. Animals enjoy fighting, sex, and eating, but they don't want to work. Animals work only when they experience hunger or thirst. When an animal has everything it wants, it just lays down and sleeps, or it patrols its territory and looks for an animal to fight with. Animals don't have any desires to think or work or learn. So why have America, India, Taiwan, Japan, and Western Europe resisted communism? Why did Russia, China, and certain other nations become communist? When I was a child, the widespread belief was that communism was like a disease that could infect anybody. Millions of Americans were afraid that communism spreads by propaganda, and therefore we must censor communist propaganda and communist politicians, or else America would become communist. However, I think that theory is as stupid as the theory that drug dealers are responsible for drug abuse. As I pointed out in other audio files, you could give me a truckload of alcohol, cocaine, and other drugs, and I wouldn't have any desire to use any of it. The same applies to communism. If we gave everybody on the planet a truckload of communist propaganda, some people would find the philosophy very appealing, and others would consider it idiotic. We don't become an alcoholic or a drug user simply by having access to alcohol or drugs. We have to have the desire to abuse alcohol and drugs. Likewise, we don't become a communist simply because of exposure to communist propaganda. We only become communist if that philosophy appeals to our personality. Russia and China didn't become communist because of propaganda. Those nations became communist because a large percentage of their population considered that philosophy to be sensible and practical. Russia doesn't have a problem with alcoholism because the people have easy access to vodka. They have a problem with alcoholism for the same reason America and Europe also have a problem with alcoholism. Specifically, a large percentage of the human population enjoys becoming drunk. America, India, Taiwan, Japan, and Western Europe have been resisting communism, but it's not because we're succeeding in censoring communist propaganda. It's because we have a higher percentage of more advanced humans. We don't have to fear communist propaganda. We only have to be concerned about the citizens who are attracted to communism. In other words, it's the people in our nation that we have to be concerned with, not the propaganda. If we had higher quality people, communist propaganda would have no effect at all. And if we had higher quality people, there would be no alcoholism or drug use or burglaries. You can see this concept in regards to the 9/11 attack and the Holocaust. The majority of Americans and Europeans were raised on Jewish propaganda that Arabs attacked us on 9/11 and that Nazis exterminated 6 million Jews. We believed the propaganda because we didn't know anything else. However, now that the internet exists, and now that people can easily create CDs and DVDs, there are people all over the world passing around information that exposes the propaganda as a lie. Unfortunately, all of us who have tried to discuss 9/11 or the Holocaust have discovered that the majority of people don't want the truth, and they don't want to deal with the problems of a society. and many people that we trusted are secretly working with the crime network. If America consisted of higher quality people, then when the information started appearing on the internet that we were lied to about 9/11, we would have rapidly spread that information and we would have eliminated the crime network a long time ago. But the only information that spreads rapidly is information about Britney Spears. The criminal Jews are not dominating America and Europe because they're too clever to be identified and arrested. They're dominating our nations because they're exploiting the irresponsible and selfish qualities of the majority of people. They also exploit the craving for money and fame by bribing people. We have to change our attitudes towards life or else our nations will deteriorate. Every problem we suffer from can be traced to the behavior of people. We have to be concerned about the people in our society. We have to control immigration, and we have to put better people in leadership positions, and we must control reproduction. Unless you're a recent visitor to my website, then you know that I don't believe there is such a thing as evil. The people who misbehave are just humans like the rest of us. They have the same desires, abilities, and qualities. The reason people behave differently is partly because of the environment we grow up in, but mainly because of the subtle differences between our brains and bodies. Even our bodies have an effect on our behavior. Two people could have identical brains, but if their bodies are different, they could end up with different attitudes and different lives. For example, if one person has a liver that isn't functioning properly, his blood chemistry could be messed up. And since our brain depends upon chemicals in the blood in order to operate, his thinking can be impaired. This is especially obvious with people who have severe diabetes. When their blood sugar is extremely high or extremely low, their brain doesn't function properly because our brain was designed for a certain level of glucose. If a person thousands of years ago had diabetes, everybody would have assumed that his strange changes in behavior was due to the devil or because he was evil. But he may have had an excellent brain that functioned perfectly. An automobile engine will not function properly if the supply of fuel, air, or oil is contaminated or at levels that are too high or too low. Our brain is a chemical computer. A person could have an excellent brain, but if the chemicals in his blood are not within the range that the human brain was designed for, his brain will malfunction. If we don't understand what his problem is, we will interpret his strange behavior as a sign that he's possessed by the devil, or that he's evil, or that he has a defective brain. But there are no evil people. There are only humans. But we have subtle differences in our design for our brain and body, and every living creature has imperfections or defects. Some of the adults who have childish or crude behavior may be suffering from mental or physical defects. But as I've mentioned in another audio file, the human gene pool is certainly full of primitive traits. And when a person inherits one of those primitive traits, he will look or behave more like a primitive savage than the rest of us. Have you seen photos of the people who have hair all over their face and body, just like an animal? They may be examples of people who inherited a very primitive genetic trait. Children behave in a very crude manner, and if a child doesn't mature properly, he will end up as an adult that we might describe as obnoxious, crude, selfish, vengeful, evil, or possessed. Thousands of years ago, nature took care of the people who didn't fit into society. They either died because they couldn't compete successfully against the more advanced humans, or they were shunned by society, and so they never reproduced. But modern societies have a tendency to feel sorry for the misfits and the retards. It's easy for us to support defective people, so they're not a significant burden on us, but when we allow them to vote, influence the economy, and have as many babies as they please, we hurt society. Modern societies have to do what nature used to do. We have to pass judgment on who is allowed to influence society and who is allowed to have children. Any society that refuses to do this will eventually degrade into savages and retards. However, in order to pass judgment on who among us is worthy of reproducing, we have to make a decision about what type of behavior should be considered proper for a human. Consider the people who react to anger when somebody wants to leave their nation. When I was growing up, Russia and China were like prisons. Their citizens had an extremely difficult time getting permission to even visit another nation. Even today, those nations treat their citizens in a strange manner. For example, a Chinese actress named Gong Li married a man in Singapore, and in November 2008, she became a citizen of Singapore. I would not describe that event as newsworthy, but it ended up in news reports all over the world because a lot of Chinese people reacted with incredible anger and hatred. They insulted her as a traitor, a slut, a celebrity brat, and a fake Chinese. If you're a member of a sports club, a business, or some other organization, how do you react when somebody decides to leave your organization? Do you react with anger or hatred? And how do you react when somebody wants to leave the nation you live in? Do you hate them? If you were dictator of your nation, would you put a fence and armed guards around the border to stop people from leaving? If I was in control of a business, a nation, or an organization, and if people were trying to escape, I would want to know who is leaving and why. If I discovered that the most honest, talented, and respectable people wanted to leave, I wouldn't hate them. Instead, I would wonder, what am I doing that's causing them to leave? I would look critically at myself and my performance. And if I discovered that the people who wanted to leave were the retards, misfits, and criminals, I would be glad that they were leaving, and I would even offer assistance. I can't imagine a situation in which I would hate somebody who wanted to leave. So why do the Russians and Chinese react with hatred when somebody wants to leave their nation? This behavior should not be considered normal or proper. I would classify it as animal-like. People think of animals as loving, wonderful creatures, and we assume our primitive ancestors were also wonderful. But animals are not loving or wonderful. They are nothing but biological robots that are incredibly stupid, selfish, violent, and suspicious. If animals had enough intelligence to talk to us, every animal would tell us sad stories about how they are the most wonderful and loving creatures, but they're mercilessly abused by other animals. Their sad stories would be very similar to those from the Ashkenazi Jews. Another aspect of Russia and China that confused me as a child were their frequent and spectacular parades, in which they would display a large variety of military weapons and enormous numbers of soldiers. There are parades all over the world, but the communist nations seem to take the display of military weapons and soldiers to an extreme. I'll post a photo of a nuclear missile in a parade in Russia on the page that has this audio file. How many times have Americans or Europeans put nuclear missiles in a parade? I don't think it's a coincidence that male animals determine their position in the hierarchy with displays of violence, and both teenage and adult gang members use weapons and acts of violence to intimidate and impress one another. Many years ago, a television reporter asked a teenage gang member why he carries a gun, and he replied that before he had the gun, he was treated badly by the other kids at school. But once he started carrying a gun, he got respect. He was so stupid that he didn't understand that the gun was only causing people to fear him, not respect him. Stupid men have trouble grasping the difference between being respected and being feared, because both reactions are very similar to one another. For example, when a person respects you, he will politely listen to what you have to say. But when a person fears you, he will also politely listen to what you have to say. The reaction is identical. It takes a certain amount of intelligence to figure out if somebody is listening to you because he respects you or because he's afraid you're going to kill him. I don't think it's a coincidence that communist leaders are behaving like stupid gang members. I think the type of men who are getting control of those nations really are as stupid and as crude as they appear to be. This would explain why none of them ever say anything or do anything intelligent. And consider the issue of why China has been so obsessed with getting control of Hong Kong and Taiwan for years. Why don't they choose to be friendly and cooperative with Hong Kong and Taiwan? I think it's because of what we refer to as jealousy or envy. Animals are in a vicious battle for survival. They don't form friendships, and they don't cooperate with each other. They regard competitors as enemies. When they see an animal with something they want, it triggers emotions to grab the item and hate the animal who has it. For example, when people who have two pet dogs put a bowl of food down in front of each dog, sometimes one of the dogs will ignore his own bowl of food and try to take the food from the other dog. Since each animal has its own food, this type of behavior is ridiculous. But animals have no ability to think. They're designed to fight with each other over territory, food, and females. Animals have no desire to share items or trust one another. Jealousy was acceptable thousands of years ago, but it's destructive in modern society. Jealousy causes people to sabotage and hate their competitors. The world today needs people who can work together and cooperate. The humans who consider themselves surrounded by enemies in a battle for survival have a crude personality that has to be removed from the human gene pool. Since I'm getting near the 80-minute mark, I'll end by pointing out some interesting aspects of a fire that recently occurred in my city. Actually, there have been mysterious fires all over the nation during 2008. During the summer of 2008, there were about 1,500 fires burning throughout California alone. A lot of fires are caused by lightning and accidents, but we should consider the possibility that some of these fires are set by citizens or businessmen for insurance purposes, or by Zionist Jews who have even more diabolical motives. During July, a large fire burned in the hills a few miles from where I live, and it came very close to burning houses. In fact, if the map of the burn area is accurate, it came within hundreds of feet of my mother's house. A few months later, the fire department announced that a 16-year-old boy was responsible for it. Then, in November, another fire erupted in the wealthy section of my city, and it burned more than 200 expensive houses. A few days after, the fire department announced that 10 college students were responsible. However, the fire department didn't actually figure out who caused either of those two fires. Rather, the police and fire departments received tips from the public. It's entirely possible that some concerned citizens truly provided the police with honest information about the cause of the fire. But a common tactic of the Zionist crime network is to find a patsy to blame their crime on. Once you realize that every fire department in this nation, along with every police department, university, government agency, and media company, is lying to us about 9/11, the Holocaust, the Apollo moon landing, and lots of other crimes, we ought to wonder, why should we trust these liars and cowards when they tell us the cause of devastating fires? If you think I'm being harsh, take a look at the official story for the November fire. We're told that 10 college students decided to have a party in an abandoned structure in the hills surrounding the city. They built some type of bonfire. Between 3 and 5 in the morning, the last of the students went home. The students assumed that they put the fire out. But, according to the official story, some hot coals were still burning. Those coals burned for 13 hours. And then the wind blew some of the hot coals onto the surrounding dry grass. It's entirely possible that the official story is correct. Those students may have created such a large bonfire that there was enough fuel to burn for 13 hours. And it's entirely possible that somebody who knew those 10 students decided to contact the police and turn them in. However, it's also entirely possible that those students are simply the suckers who are going to take the blame for a fire that they had nothing to do with. I can think of lots of possible scenarios. For example, it's possible that some Zionist Jews heard about those students having a bonfire in that area, and they decided to take advantage of it. They rushed up to the area, started a fire, and later called the police to give an anonymous tip that those students didn't completely put out the bonfire. This brings up an interesting issue that you ought to be aware of. If you've listened to my other audio files, then you know that the Zionist Jews have been trying for years to become my friend and set me up for blackmail or arrest. They've already tricked Christopher Bolin and his family into getting kidnapped on or about June 11, 2007. And recently, a political leader in Austria died in a very strange car accident on October 11, 2008. It may just be a coincidence that both of them became victims on the 11th day of the month, but it seems as if the criminal Jews have some obsession with the number 11. Anyway, the Zionist Jews are constantly trying to eliminate those of us who expose or oppose them. And one way they can do this is to set us up for crimes that we didn't commit. Imagine if you or I had gone to a party in which there was a bonfire, and after we left, the Jews decided to light the area on fire. We could end up taking the blame. Some people might respond that my imagination is running wild and that I'm blaming Jews for everything, but look at history and you can see that Zionism is not a friendly movement. It's a vicious and diabolical attempt to take control of our world. They have already instigated wars, attacked the USS Liberty, blown up buildings in New York City while thousands of people were inside, and I'm sure they blew up those levees in New Orleans. They have proven time after time that they're willing to kill, torture, lie, and destroy whatever they need in order to accomplish their objectives. Why wouldn't they be willing to start fires? This can help put pressure on government officials, or they could burn down buildings for insurance purposes. Why wouldn't they use every trick they can think of? That fire in July that came close to my mother's house was causing the electric power to go off and on repeatedly in my city. And for all I know, the Jews were trying to create so much chaos in my city that they'd be able to kill or kidnap me. Am I paranoid to consider this possibility? Or would I be a fool not to consider it? My advice is to take a serious look at the Zionist movement and its history and be very careful about who you associate with and who you trust. You might wonder why the police or fire department or military doesn't do something to stop these criminals. I'm sure there's lots of individuals within our government who wants to do something, but they may be surrounded by people who don't care. And the biggest problem may be their own leadership. All elected officials seem to be criminals. And all of the people who get promoted to top positions in the military seem to be under the control of Jews. One of the district attorneys in my city, Tom Snedden, has a strange obsession with Michael Jackson. In 1993, he tried to have Michael Jackson arrested for pedophilia, but the police said there's not enough evidence. He tried again in 2003, but again, nothing came of it. He wasted a lot of tax money. The worst accusations against Michael Jackson are trivial compared to the accusations against Congressman Barney Frank and other government officials. Furthermore, almost everybody in Hollywood and the entertainment business seems to have problems with drugs, sex, gambling, or pedophilia. So why does Tom Snedden have this obsession with Michael Jackson when America has so many more serious problems? Snedden was elected for district attorney 6 times in a row. My advice is to consider every elected official as either a member or a puppet of the Jewish crime network. Nobody else seems to get favorable publicity or funding. In the animal world, the males who become dominant are those who are truly in good physical and mental health, and this was certainly true of human societies thousands of years ago. But today our societies are becoming dominated by freaks who work together to exploit and manipulate us. The scum is rising to the top of our societies today. But we can turn this around. Don't get discouraged. Spread this information. Burn it on CDs. Copy the videos and the documents. And eventually we'll find enough people who are fed up with this corruption. Well, that's my talk for today. Until the next time, bye.